M. Jackson, W266, DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, your home for original reporting.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago. As investigators try to determine the motive for last night's deadly shooting on the Michigan State University campus, police have released the identities of the three students who have died. More from CBS's Roxana Saberi.
Among the dead in Michigan, junior Ariel Anderson, who wanted to be a pediatrician, sophomore Brian Frazier, president of his fraternity, and junior Alexandria Werner, a talented athlete whose positivity changed lives.
Her smile was massive. Her heart was huge. Her kindness and compassion were second to none.
Five students have been critically injured. Police say the suspect turned the gun on himself when he was later confronted by police. Demands for answers after the recent downing of three unidentified objects over Alaska, Canada, and Lake Huron. A White House spokesperson says there's strong consideration that the objects are benign. The latest from CBS's Nancy Cordes.
What are these things? Who sent them here? And what are they doing here?
GOP senators argued today that the public deserves more answers from the commander-in-chief.
My phone's ringing off the wall, and we got a president of the United States and not saying anything.
We asked White House officials if the president has any plans to make public comments about these objects, and all they would say is that he continues to be briefed and takes the situation very seriously.
California Senator Dianne Feinstein, the oldest member of Congress, has decided against running for re-election next year. CBS's Scott McFarland says Feinstein will turn 90 in June.
Dianne Feinstein has been a U.S. senator for more than 30 years, the first woman to chair the Senate Judiciary Committee and the Senate Intelligence Committee, and she was a former mayor of San Francisco. Next year is the final year of her term, and she says it will be the final year for her in the U.S. Senate. Several California Democrats are scrambling to run to succeed her, including House member Adam Schiff.
President Biden will visit Poland next week to meet with regional leaders on Russia's invasion of Ukraine. CBS's Steve Dorsey in Washington talks with one of Poland's top diplomats in the U.S. on the West's help for Ukraine.
Several NATO countries are preparing to deliver tanks to Ukraine that could arrive there in just weeks as Ukrainian troops train on them in Poland. But so far, Poland has stopped short of sending Ukraine the F-16 fighter jets it wants to fight back against Russia. Polish Consul General Adrian Kubicki worries it could intensify the war.
Or will open a new chapter, escalate the conflict.
The person who won the largest U.S. lottery jackpot in history last November wants to stay out of the spotlight. California State Lottery Director Alva Johnson says the winner of over $2 billion wrote that he was shocked and ecstatic.
The name of the person who was the only player to match all six numbers of the historic Powerball drawing last November is Edwin Castro.
And this is CBS News.
A progressive voice from Beaver Dam to Kenosha. WAUK 540 AM. Always streaming at waukradio.com.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know. Governor Evers wants automatic voter registration in Wisconsin. More details of his two-year state budget proposal are coming out ahead of his budget address tomorrow night. Evers wants to connect the databases for the DMV and the Elections Commission, so when you get your driver's license or renew it, you're registered to vote. The governor is also proposing a number of other voting initiatives, even though they're not expected to become part of the final budget. Public health officials in Madison want to make State Street safer. The City County Health Department is using crime data to find out what areas need improving. Streetlights are getting brighter, and the health department is offering awareness training so bystanders can spot trouble. In sports, the Bucks go for their 11th win in a row at home tonight against Boston. The Badgers host Michigan. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
Wisconsin's spring primary election is Tuesday, February 21st, and your local Civic Media radio station will be tracking the results.
Special live coverage starts at 7 p.m., and News Director Terry Bell, with a team of political experts, will be following which candidates, both local and in the state Supreme Court race, move on to April.
Spring primary election coverage live, Tuesday, February 21st, starting at 7, here on your local Civic Media radio station, streaming on the Civic Media app.
You know him as the nose tackle for the green and gold.
1993 to 1999, and again 2001 to 2003.
125 games, 292 tackles, 7 sacks, and a Super Bowl ring. But there's more to life than stats, and there's more to life than football.
You're about to find out.
Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, featuring Packers legend Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram.
Monday mornings at 8 on The Shaw and on the Civic Media app.
Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian.
I'm really trying hard not to go insane from the mind screw that is this situation. Yes. With I was going to say the GAB, but now it's the WEC, which right. Was audited by the LAB, and then it's now screwed up by the GOP, and we're all SOL. Good for us. Congratulations.
Look at all those acronyms. Yeah.
Oh. We're the winners.
Tune in for Dueling Tangents every weekday at 2.
WAUK 540 AM, New Berlin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com. WAUK 540 AM, Brookfield's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at WAUK.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here. Today on the big program, lots to get to, lots to talk about. Good little story coming out of the Federal Trade Commission. Not one of those places that gets a lot of news and a lot of attention, but one of the commissioners, Christine Wilson, a Trump appointee, has, in a very loud and boisterous way, announced her exit in protest of the chair, Luna Khan, and the leadership there, which for me, I got to tell you, set off bells and whistles and balloons, yes, and rockets. Good thing, because what this means is the Federal Trade Commission is about to do hopefully what I've been wanting, begging, and pleading for the last couple of decades, and that is actually start looking at breaking up some of these big monopolies, holding these conglomerates, these massive companies accountable. You talk about inflation. One of the biggest drivers of inflation is corporate greed. It's these people gouging us, and there being no competition. Now remember, Republicans always said how much they love competition, love the competition, love the free market. And yet you look around industry after industry, handful of companies control the vast majority of activity in that industry. I've been hearing undercurrents that there's maybe they dug up Teddy Roosevelt, and maybe the ghost of Teddy Roosevelt is back, and we're going to start doing some trust busting. Let it begin. But I loved her statement. In her written statement, she said, "We all know the simple rule. If you see something, say something." As an antitrust lawyer, a corporate one, I counseled clients to avoid trouble by knowing when to object and how to exit. When my clients attended trade association gatherings, I advised them to leave quickly if discussions with competitors took a wrong turn and raised alarm bells about price fixing, because they do that in the back rooms. They don't do that at trade association shows or other illegal activity, she writes. Make a noisy exit. Say, spill a pitcher of water so that the attendees remember that you objected and that you left. Although serving as FTC commissioner has been the highest honor of my professional career, I must follow my own advice and resign in the face of continuing lawlessness. Consider this my noisy exit. Well, good. Bye. And I hope what this means is that the Federal Trade Commission is going to stop these massive conglomerates from continuing to form and going and breaking some of them up. Now, trust me, Miss Wilson, she has a lucrative gig all lined up. I guarantee it. And I got to tell you, this smells to me like a fundraising letter. This smells to me like, hey, wherever she's landing, her job is going to raise funds to fight the quote unquote, the good fight. fighting against what we should have been doing all along, and that's breaking up these big conglomerates, stopping the mass consolidation of industry after industry. But here's the thing, and this is where, I'm happy to a point, but I know big money always wins. Big money always puts itself ahead of human misery or tragedy, always. Suffering, doesn't matter. We know corporations and the wealthy, we know they get what they want all the time. And they use distractions and division to get it. Yesterday, we had another mass shooting. This time, students at Michigan State University were the victims. And all the right and the Lauren Boberts of the world, all they could talk about today was balloons and Buttigieg. That's it. Not a mention of they're not even doing thoughts and prayers anymore. There's none of that. Because I think the rest of us, agree with the state representative in Michigan and blank your thoughts and prayers was his comment. But I look at this and I go, again, it's not about helping people. It's about continuing to spew the division. Josh Hawley today, for instance, unfurled his plan to ban all kids under 16 years of age from having a social media account. But he's from a state where, there's no age limit on when you can own a gun. So can't have Twitter, can't have, name the TikTok or any Instagram or any of them, but you can have a gun. Now, remember, just last week, the Missouri House, they voted, it's just one of those things you go, they had a vote on whether kids could carry a open weapon, open carry, without parental consent. So much for parental rights. Any age, no parental age. And you go, huh? Again, it's about division, because that gun issue's got to be there, because the moneyed interests want us pitted against each other, want us divided, because, hey, if we were to actually solve problems, how could they make money? Because, look, right now, the fact that Biden mentioned the assault weapons ban in his State of the Union, gun industry thrilled. They're selling guns like never before. And the thing is, it comes back to this moment where big money always wins. The big lobbyists always will. Everywhere you look, division for profit. Look at Ohio right now. The conspiracy theorists are all a Twitter. I joked about this not too long ago. That someone believes that Biden signed an executive order to have this derailment. So, but my thought was it would be that we would stop looking at the balloons. So we need a distraction. We need the false flag. This conspiracy? No, they've gone even further. Biden made this happen so that all of the cancer that these people are going to get from this spill and the burning off of this spill and all of this stuff will not be because of the spill. No. It will be because of the COVID shots. This is how they work. Evidently, according to them, the COVID clot shot is going to give them all cancer. They're all going to die of cancer. So we're all going to die. I'm going to die of cancer from the shot. But it's going to be because, that spill, a couple hundred miles from here, it all came this way, and that's going to be it. And this is how they divide us. And again, I keep coming back to the reality is behind all of this nonsense, behind all of this idiocracy, is corporate greed. Do you really think the CEO of Norfolk Southern, do you think the CEO of the gun groups, do you think the CEOs of any of the industries in this country, do they think they really care about the people of East Palestine or East Lansing or East wherever? Do you think, or West wherever? Do you think they really care? No, they care about the bottom line. They care about feeding their pockets. They care about lining their pockets. I look at that thing, the derailment. This is something we've been talking about for a while. We've been talking about precision scheduled railroading on this show for a while. I've been talking about the assault on rail workers for over a decade now. It first came to me in 2013 when we were doing our labor history tour. And we ended up out in I think it was in Kansas City, where one of the unions there were going, have you heard of this? And I'm going, what? They want to go down to one person on a train? And he goes, yeah. Eventually, they want to go down to no people on a train. And all of the assaults that have been going on from that time till now, these unions and these workers have been saying, look, conditions are getting worse. Our ability to do our job getting worse. Now, we've been talking to these workers for years. We've been talking to their unions about the conditions on the railroad. Nobody's listening. And look, I was as angry as anyone when President Biden and some Democrats, along with virtually every Republican, backdoored those workers who were saying, hey, look, we want sick days. Hey, we want some say. We want more power in the workplace over our conditions. They warned us. They were warning us. They were telling us. And look, this again, big money tops human pain and suffering and misery and disaster all the time. Because look what's going on right now. It's reported that the railroads out there offering people, what was it, inconvenience fee money. And from some of the people that I've heard, it comes with a non-disclosure. You're not gonna talk about this. You're not gonna sue us. Understand, their lawyers are working overtime right now. And again, it comes back to big money. Big money tops suffering and pain and misery every time. You've seen this happen time and time again. This is not new. It's not new. The big business interests supersede the needs, wants, and the will of the working people. Not surprising. Now, again, I go back to the conditions on the railroad we've been talking about. This precision scheduled railroading, these workers having no life whatsoever, exhausted most of the time, no family life, no sick days. We've been talking about this for a while. We've been talking about the fact that they've cut tens of thousands of workers over the last couple of decades. We've been talking about the fact that, you know what? The safety inspections aren't what they used to be. When I heard they have to do a 120-point inspection in 90 seconds, you can't honestly look at anything in 90 seconds. As someone who every time he takes a truck out on the road does at least a 15 to 18, most of the time 30 minute pre-trip of 18 wheels. Can you imagine a 5 mile long train? And again, this is the reason I'm such a strong believer in labor unions. The fact that these workers were out there raising the bells, sounding the alarms, telling the stories, warning us. And again, we didn't listen. And look, both Democrats and Republicans, again, sided with big money. There's a lot of blame to go around. So everyone's going, gee, I wonder why corporate America is not, the corporate media is not hounding on this. Because they're all in this. This, again, is one of those moments where you go, which side are you on? Are you on the side of the money or on the side of the people who get screwed over by the moneyed interests? And I look at the comments on the social media platforms, and look, I think Josh Hawley should just ban social media because it's bad to begin with, because we are our worst versions of ourselves. The experiment has failed. We can't handle it at any age, 16, 18, 25, it doesn't matter. The reality here, again, I come back to the reason I'm such a strong supporter of unions is these workers, they were out there, they had it right. They were out there sounding the alarms. And we silenced them. We allowed them to be silenced. Now, here's the thing. And you go, well, what's the difference? Well, the difference is if these people didn't have unions, we would have never heard anything. Because you think about industry after industry where these kind of conditions and these kind of things happen, and you never hear a peep. So for me, the reality in this, it's time to start holding these big corporations and the moneyed interests, holding them accountable. Stop with the divisive stuff. And at least on this, where I think everyone in the town of East Palestine is now looking at each other going, it doesn't matter, red hat, blue hat. We're all breathing the same poison air. Our houses are contaminated with all the same crap. And all of them are going to get the screw job. Red, blue, doesn't matter. Again, the only color in my mind that ever really matters is green. And the sooner we pick up on that, maybe the safer we're going to be. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Gonna take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around.
Phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
If you're a fan of the show, you've heard our Labor History in Two segments, and you can hear them on the radio pretty much anywhere in the U.S. Labor history has never been more important than it is right now. So here's what we'd like you to do. Tell a teacher. Tell a teacher that labor history is important and that they can get digestible two-minute lessons that are absolutely free. Free to download, free to use, free to share. Tell a teacher to go to therickSmithShow.com/history and help us put labor back where it belongs, in the classroom. You know, generations of American workers fought, bled, and died to build the American way of life. It's our job to keep their stories alive. Go tell a teacher that we're here to help them do just that. Find us at therickSmithShow.com/history today.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
It's our quote of the day from Nikki Haley. She's back. Yeah, Nikki Haley's back. She says, you know, you should know something about me. I don't put up with bullies. When you kick back, it hurts them more if you're wearing heels. Now, this is, again, this is a common line. You may remember she said this about unions a couple years ago, about keeping those unions out of South Carolina while she was talking to the Walmart executives. Because she said that she wears heels and they hurt when she kicks. Yeah, she, again, you know, for people who keep saying that they don't believe in violence, sure there. Now, here's something interesting. I saw a story over at the New York Times, caught my attention, talking about the balloon, since the balloon is still on everyone's mind. And I come back to what I said from the very beginning. What I said in the very beginning about this is the Chinese just testing us. It isn't about information that they can gather, because they can get it from, you know, Google Earth or wherever. It's testing us. And we failed. And in this article over at the New York Times, you know, they write that while many in the world see the Chinese spy balloon as a sign of Beijing's growing aggressiveness, China has sought to cast the controversy as a symptom of the United States' irrevocable decline. Why else would a great power be spooked by a flimsy inflatable craft, China has argued, if not for a raft of internal problems like an intensely divided society, intractable partisan strife, driving President Biden to act tough on Beijing? And yet, I said this from the beginning. This was to get our attention and to see how we would react. Whereas in generations past, this would have never even made the news. Now, we're going to have hearings. Oh, boy, hearings on the balloon. So the balloon isn't going to go away. Evidently, Montana Senator John Tester, he's going to lead the investigation on why it took so long. And yet what we find out is what I said from the beginning. They're literally reporting now that they have been tracking it since it took off. They were following it when it got to the air. And again, this is why we spend gazillions of dollars on military technology. This is why we starve children and don't give health care and education to people, because we've got a military that can literally track something as they're building the damn thing. And yet you got Marjorie Trainwreck out there with a big giant balloon like a kid going to the circus, all smiles. Look at me, how cute I am. We failed this. We have failed this badly because, again, we are this divided. This was an issue that I said, from the beginning, not a big deal. This shouldn't have been a big deal. Let's calm down. The military is paying attention. Trust me. They're gathering information. Oh, gee, what do we find out? They were gathering information. The common sense of our society. Wow. And again, I go back to Josh Hawley. Josh Hawley, Your bill, maybe just ban social media completely, because clearly we're not capable of using it properly or using it. Again, the worst versions of ourselves, because, you know, the troll farms, because they do have these massive troll farms who are just throwing stuff out there to cause division. And maybe it's time we stop. Issue after issue. The balloon, Social Security, just today. Rick Scott was on one of the F channels talking about how his proposed saving of Social Security and Medicare was to give Congress the ability every year to make cuts. He compared Social Security to the military budget. He goes, you know, every year we talk about cutting the military budget because we don't have a 40-year military budget or a 100-year plan. And I love this. He said, if you don't support a 100-year defense plan, you're cutting defense spending. And you go, they're very different. Social Security is set up in a way that is supposed to take care of people in their old age. We actually have people who are smart people who say this is what we need, actuaries who figure this stuff out, life expectancy, when people retire, how much money we need. There's a bunch of that. Social Security is our only real safety net program in this country to take care of the indigent, to take care of the elderly, to take care of the disabled. Because clearly the Senate is never going to do anything with Rick Scott in there that's going to help people. But what's interesting is they cried, screamed, we would never cut it. And again, I go back to what I said yesterday. You know, don't you accuse us of saying that thing that we said. Here's Rick Scott, you know, talking about every year, well, we should reevaluate. No, you shouldn't. You should have a plan in place like insurance companies and actuaries actually do when they figure this stuff out. You should have smart people doing this instead of Rick Scott, who, I got to tell you, as a CEO, not a good record. Not a good record for people. Good record for him. He made lots of money, huge amounts of money. One of the wealthiest guys in the Senate. But for the people that, well, he screwed over, don't know. Also, Ron Johnson, again, don't you accuse me of saying that thing that I said. Ron Johnson was on a radio program talking about how Social Security is a legal Ponzi scheme. And not just a legal Ponzi scheme, but an irresponsible legal Ponzi scheme. So we're now equating, you know, Social Security to Bernie Madoff. Instead of it being the anti-poverty program that it was set up to be, the safety net that was supposed to be there, this is what Republicans have done. Now remember the State of the Union. Come with me if you will. They were aghast. How dare you say that I would want to cut Social Security? Why would you say such a thing? When three quarters of the House signed on to the Republican Study Committee's report that in the upcoming budget for 2023, one of the things that they would do in their blueprint to save America was to raise the eligibility age of Social Security, which means a cut for you, and propose cuts in the benefit formula, what they're calling modernizing. Just modernizing it. We're not cutting it. No, we're not cutting it. No, we're just modernizing it. Changing the benefit for anyone under 54. So fortunately, I'm going to get beyond that. So screw you young people. You're all in. You get nothing. This is what they're trying to do. And, you know, some means testing, some work requirements. So that means, you know, if your wife doesn't work, they're going to screw her out of any Social Security in the event that I pass. Congratulations. Love the family. And my favorite part is they're going to divert a part of the Social Security money into private accounts called retirement freedom. Again, this was not a retirement account. This was an anti-poverty program. This is one of the three legs of the stool of retirement. Pension from the years you worked, some savings that you squirreled away, and Social Security. Now, they've destroyed the pension system. The defined benefit's gone. They've destroyed your ability to save because wages have been declining and stagnant for 40 years. And even now with inflation, it's still being eaten away. And they've done nothing to help workers organize and fight for the billions and billions and billions of profit. And now they want to screw you over on Social Security. But hey, they didn't say that. No, don't you dare. Don't you dare accuse me what we wrote down in our blueprint to save America.
A progressive voice from Manitowoc to Janesville. WAUK 540 AM. Always streaming at waukradio.com.
CBS News Brief. President Biden responds to the shootings last night at Michigan State University and calls for additional gun control measures.
Three lives have been lost and five seriously injured. And it's a family's worst nightmare. It's happening far too often in this country.
We still don't know what the latest flying objects are that were shot down last weekend. National Security Council spokesman John Kirby.
The intelligence community is considering as, a leading explanation that these could just be balloons tied to some commercial or benign purpose.
The person who won the largest U.S. lottery jackpot in history wants his privacy after claiming a more than $2 billion Powerball prize. California State Lottery Media Deputy Director Carolyn Becker.
Edwin Castro chose that lump sum, which for this drawing is nearly $1 billion, $997.6 million.
CBS News Brief. I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
The Shaw 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk from Butler to Windlake. Always streaming at waukradio.com.
For Civic Media, I'm Jane Matnair. Here's what you need to know. If you like to fish in Wisconsin waters, be careful about how many you eat. That's because of growing concerns over forever chemicals called PFAS. The Journal Sentinel reporting a recent study by the Environmental Working Group and Duke University showed that eating fish taken from waters with elevated levels of PFAS might be even riskier than drinking water with the chemicals, leading to higher concentrations in humans' blood serum. Students from Osseo Middle School got a shout out on Twitter from recording artist Lizzo. They won one of eight entries in a Name a Snowplow contest. The sixth grade history students from Osseo enter the name Blizzo with the Minnesota Department of Transportation to name a snowplow after the singer. Lizzo said on Twitter that of all the awards she's received, this by far is the highest honor. I'm Jane Matnair. This is Civic Media News.
Hey everybody, how we doing? I'm Charlie Behrens, inviting you to join me Saturdays and or Sundays at noon. It's a horse apiece, whatever you decide. We're doing the Cripescast, where we talk to people for and or from the Midwest, and it's more fun than a six-pack of Jolly Cut. Okay, the pride of Random Lake, that Jolly Good is. Anyway, it's on your Civic Media station and the Civic Media app. And do me a favor, yeah, tell your folks I says hi. Okay, real good.
We have to really understand how critically important a time this is. Time for talk is over. The time for action is now. Because my voice has always been and will continue to be for people who don't have a voice.
Tune in to the Earl Ingram Show every Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. Only on WAUK 540 a.m. 101.1 FM, The Shaw.
Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian.
I'm really trying hard not to go insane from the mind screw that is this situation. Yes. With I was going to say the GAB, but now it's the WEC, which is audited by the LAB, and then it's now screwed up by the GOP, and we're all SOL. Good for us. Congratulations.
Look at all those acronyms. Yeah.
Oh. We're the winners.
Tune in for Dueling Tangents every weekday at 2.
Look through your children's eyes, and you will discover the true magic of a forest.
Find a forest near you and start exploring at discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the United States Forest Service and the Ad Council.
TheConsumerVoice.org.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, the reality is, Every time we talk about the infrastructure bill, I get the blowback from the troll farm saying, well, I don't see anything being built. And look, you know, I don't know that they're getting it out the door fast enough. I'm hoping that we start seeing this spring and into summer massive numbers of orange cones. God, I hate orange cones. But also the fact that, you know, when we're rebuilding, we make all that stuff here. This could be a really big summer, and I'm hoping it is. And here to share some thoughts on, you know, are we seeing the rollout fast enough? Are we seeing, well, what we're hoping comes out of this infrastructure bill? And are we touting our own horn? Are we talking enough about it? I've asked my good friend Scott Ball to come share some thoughts. Scott's the president of the Alliance for American Manufacturing, AmericanManufacturing.org, the website. Scott, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, Rick, great to be with you tonight.
So, you know, I'm looking at this, and, you know, are we seeing the rollout of this fast enough? I know, you know, during the Obama years, we heard about a lot of shovel-ready projects, and people were saying, well, we didn't get enough out of that. Are we seeing something different this time?
I would say yes, to some extent we are. I mean, I think that the administration has been careful about rolling this out so that it's not haphazard and that truly priority projects are getting funded. But you've seen tangible examples of this already. I mean, you saw, you know, Biden with Sherrod Brown, Mitch McConnell, of all people, at the bridge over the Ohio River between Cincinnati and northern Kentucky, this getting rebuilt. You've seen him in Baltimore and in the New York City area. I'm talking about tunnels for rail. You know, Golden Gate Bridge is another iconic bridge that's getting some reconstruction money. So it is happening. It is happening out there. And, you know, I'll show you other tangible examples as well in broadband and in EV charging networks, both of which are funded through the infrastructure bill.
Right.
In broadband, you've seen Corning announce a new factory in Arizona and scale up its employment in North Carolina. And by the way, in North Carolina, those are steelworker union jobs because of the broadband rollout, which is going to need fiber optic cable. You've seen EV charging network companies scale up dramatically in the United States. I mean, there's, God, I think like a dozen that have established operations in the United States in anticipation of the EV charging network money coming out, which, by the way, I think is going to be announced tomorrow. But that is well underway with a very ambitious goal to build out that network along interstate highways to reduce issues with respect to access and to range anxiety. So I guess, you know, honestly, Rick, and you've also seen Republican members who voted against the infrastructure bill tout projects being funded in their states for road construction or widening.
I mean, the shot at the State of the Union that the president gave out. You know, you didn't vote for it, but I'll see you at the opening or the groundbreaking. Yeah. I thought that was brilliant.
Right. Right. And so, you know, it's interesting because when reporters follow up with some of these Republicans who are saying, hey, didn't you vote against this? And, you know, their typical answer is like, well, I supported this. I didn't support other things in the bill. But, you know, you had to just vote up or down. And it's kind of a pretty lame excuse. But the answer is it's coming. And here's the last point that I'll make. The other thing about getting this right is the Made in America aspects of it, which Biden focused on in the State of the Union. We talked about that last week right after the State of the Union address to make sure that those Buy America requirements are attached to it. And that is important. And I will say some agencies are doing better than others.
Yeah. Now, I was going to ask you about that because I saw your piece over at the Columbus Dispatch, which, you know, again, we need to be talking about if we're going to be doing all of this investment, if we're going to be doing all these roads and bridges and broadband and all this stuff, you know, shouldn't we have the supply chain here at home to make this stuff? And again, I go back to domestic production for domestic consumption. We've got to not allow that to be watered down. And that was really the crux of what your piece over at the Dispatch was.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And, you know, it starts with, you know, there's been a Made in America requirement for roads and bridges and transit systems since the 1980s. And that requires iron and steel to be melted and poured in the United States that's used in those projects. So there is a baseline for all of this, but there's obviously a dramatic expansion of it. And there's expansion for the materials. Now we're covering not only steel, iron, and some other manufactured goods. We're covering drywall and the lumber and the fiber optic cable and other aluminum and copper and other construction materials that are used in school buildings or in other things that are going to be built out using this. And so, you know, some agencies are doing this faster than others. And, you know, I'm just going to say, you know, the interests that oppose this are the contractors who like to bring in the dumped products so that they can get a better margin for the public works projects that they're bidding on. And the states and localities who view it as a nuisance to kind of have to monitor all of this stuff, even though they're getting a lot more money because of the infrastructure bill. And they want the money without any of the responsibility, which is also kind of ridiculous. And then, you know, foreign countries and importers oppose as well, saying, well, you know, this should be more open to our products. Even though, as Biden pointed out during the State of the Union address, we are perfectly within our trade rights to have this Made in America requirement. So, you know, we've seen uneven rollout from the agency. Like I think the EV charging example is a good one because I think that's where they've done a pretty good job. I think for the clean water systems, I think the EPA has done a pretty good job. But I think others have been kind of captured by these special interests and tied into knots. But I do know this, Rick, and I will say it, that Biden means this. He really does. And so I know he's putting the heat on his cabinet secretaries to get this done and is trying to educate them. And the challenge we face is this, and I'll just give an example of something that came up during a hearing. The HUD secretary, Marsha Fudge, who is a former member of Congress from Cleveland, was asked about Buy America by a member of Congress. And she said, well, we don't make enough steel here to satisfy this, so we've got to proceed. And here's the problem. She represented a district that had a massive steel mill in it that is adding jobs all the time now and should be super familiar with this. But these are the talking points that they get from the other special interests and kind of the bureaucracy that's been entrenched that don't like anything new. I realize that you know, some people respond not well to kind of like new policy and whatever, but they're also getting a boatload of money. And so the absolute minimum is say, look, one of the reasons why you're getting all this money is because there is this Made in America requirement that's attached to it. So get on it. And I think Biden's doing a good job of that, but his bureaucracy kind of has to catch up.
I got to tell you, that's really distressing to hear someone from Cleveland who lived through the closures of Republic and J&L and you know what happened at LTV and all of this. It's really distressing to hear that she doesn't get it. And for me, I got to be honest. This is why I like Biden so much, and I've been attacked from every direction on this. I feel that he's undoing 40, 50 years of neoliberal kind of policies and really getting us back to, you know, his childhood, if you will. You know, getting back to when, you know, there was the factory down the road that families, you know, that fathers worked at and now hopefully mothers work at. That there was that community around building something that you used and that there was pride in that. I think he understands what we found out as we were traveling through the 8 states during our Working Class Heroes tours, as we went to those places who used to be something, used to be where we made stuff. And that pride seems to be gone. How come we're not getting that message out? More importantly than just, you know, we're going to spend some extra money on this or that, but really talking about, you know, how we're going to rebuild that pride that, yeah, that once was, that my grandparents' generation, that they built.
Yeah. Well, look, it's a lot easier to talk about the problems than the solutions or the good stories. And you see this more broadly where, yeah, there have been some layoffs in tech, and I don't want to diminish how that lands with people who are impacted. But at the same time that's happening, we added like 500,000 jobs in the economy in January. And so it's true that there have been some high profile layoffs, but there's also a massive amount of hiring going on in the economy. And it's the same thing with this, is that we have seen a record amount of investment in American factories over the last 2 years because of obviously macro and economic factors, like, wow, there was a pandemic and we had supply chain problems, so maybe it's a good idea to locate more production here, and also the actions of the Chinese government that have prompted that, but also public policy here, like these Made in America requirements, or the infrastructure bill, or the clean energy resources, or the semiconductor manufacturing resources that are being provided. So there's intent to all of this, but it's a lot easier to talk about and get headlines for things like inflation, or what have you, which, by the way, is coming down, than it is for all of this. And so I think, look, I think Biden and the team understand that because, you know this, the poll numbers about this stuff are ridiculously low. Like, no one knows about this yet. And so I think that he and his trusted communicators are going to be out there spending a lot of time talking about these kitchen table issues, along with protecting healthcare, Medicare, Social Security. But I think that this is going to be a repeated theme. And the great thing about this, Rick, is that in communities, I had that piece in the Columbus Dispatch, you know, you go to Columbus, you're going to get stories about Intel opening up a massive new factory in the area. And you can see that in so many markets around the country that, I think it's going to land there better than it is on kind of the cable news chatter.
You got that right.
Yeah.
And I understand you guys are doing a letter campaign to reach out to Congress. People can go and sign up and get more information. Tell me about the Made in America infrastructure action you've got going on.
Yeah. So, you know, we had this big success about making, you know, about getting the Buy America requirements for this $1.2 trillion of infrastructure money. You know, the agencies are starting to implement it, and the states need to do that as well. And so we're telling our activists that, hey, look, there's a lot at stake here. We got one shot to get this right. So make sure your governors, your transportation officials are following the letter of the law. And instead of, again, listening to those special interests that they have to deal with a lot, the contractors or the importers, that they are following the Build America, Buy America requirements, and they're being held accountable for it.
Well,
because we know that both Republican, Democratic voters, 83% support these requirements. It's about as high a poll number as you're going to get for anything in politics these days.
Absolutely.
So there's a lot at stake, and we want to make sure that governors and the heads of the transportation departments in the state know that we're watching, and that we're going to support their efforts. If they're implementing the law, we're going to hold them accountable if they're not.
And we'll get links out on social media. People can sign up for that, or just go to AmericanManufacturing.org, and you can find it from there. Lastly, I wanted to finish up with this idea that you brought up about, the Made in America part. You know, I kind of look at, governors or local officials with this the same way I see them with prevailing wage. The idea that we shouldn't be just looking for the cheapest way to get something done. that. We should be looking at the most cost-effective and what's best for society. And look, you can get cheap transient labor to come through and slap something together in a really shoddy way that can come tumbling down. Hey, you got it done. I see this kind of in the same vein. So for me, the conversation has to be one of education as well. And talking about, it's just not the cheapest bottom line number. It's the most beneficial use of resources.
Right.
I think, or is there a better way of framing that?
No, I think you're exactly right about it. And again, these things like prevailing wage or other, you know, Buy America or other, what we would call performance requirements that come along with these resources are critically important, because the goal of infrastructure is not only to provide that physical asset that's going to be there for everybody in the future, whether that's broadband or clean water systems or EV charging networks or better roads, better bridges, better transit systems and what have you. But it's also about the economic activity that's created around that. So when you're constructing it, that you're using project labor agreements, prevailing wage to go along, so that you're not undermining good job efforts, which I think are very important in this day and age. Or when you're sourcing the materials, that you're doing it in a way that's going to encourage insourcing, jobs coming into the United States instead of outsourcing.
Yep.
And there's lots of unfortunate examples of where we've done that with infrastructure in the past, like the Bay Bridge, which we've talked about in California, where it was made in China. And it cost the opportunity to stand up a fabricating facility on the West Coast that would employ thousands of workers. And it gave China capabilities that China didn't have before in terms of bridge construction technology. And so there's all these considerations that I think are very important. And, you know, when you're able to talk to governors about it, then they kind of, you know, many of them get it, I think, Rick. And so that's our hope here, that we'll be able to drive this home.
That is the hope. And enforcement. But Scott, I appreciate the time. Again, I hope folks will go to AmericanManufacturing.org, sign up for the action to have things made here in the U.S. As we're rebuilding our infrastructure and investing in the future. Scott Ball, president of the Alliance for American Manufacturing. Appreciate the time.
Hey, Rick, great to be with you, as always. Thanks so much for the work that you do.
Thanks so much. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Quick break, right back. Stick around. Listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1818. That was the day that abolitionist Frederick Douglass chose to celebrate his birthday. He could not be sure of the exact date of his birth because he was born into slavery. He escaped from slavery and became one of the leading black writers and orators for the cause of abolition. After the Civil War, he continued to speak and write, demanding justice for African Americans and working people. For example, in 1871, he penned an article against increasing demands for cheap labor. He wrote, "Cheap labor is a phrase that has no cheering music for the masses. Those who demand it and seek to acquire it have but little sympathy with common humanity. It is the cry of the few against the many. When we inquire who are the men who are continually vociferating for cheap labor, we find the rich and powerful, the crafty and scheming, those who live by the sweat of other men's faces, and who have no intention of cheapening labor by adding themselves to the laboring forces of society. It is the deceitful cry of the fortunate against the unfortunate. Labor is a noble word, and expresses a noble idea. Today, we still face a demand for ever cheaper labor. Business leaders and their political friends fight against efforts to raise the minimum wage. From 2011 to 2015, 8 states scaled back their prevailing wage laws, 19 reduced pensions, and 15 eroded collective bargaining rights. As these attacks on working people grow, it seems that Frederick Douglass's reminder that labor is a noble word is needed now more than ever.
We plant the food, we drive the cab, we load the ship.
Labor History in 2, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So again, I look back to what Scott Paul was talking about, the fact that we're gonna source domestically the things that we need, so we know it's not going to be shoddy, like we found out with the Bay Bridge out in California, that you got steel that half of it wasn't usable because it was garbage, and then, you know, poor craftsmanship and all down the line. I look at what's going on in Turkey right now. I don't know if you've noticed this, but there was a story day before yesterday that Turkish officials are detaining and holding contractors who built these buildings that all collapsed. There evidently 134 of these contractors who built buildings are being investigated. And look, you know, when you have the number of deaths that they had, and the number of, you know, 12-story luxury buildings that collapsed down, you got to look at shoddy construction. Also reported possibly one of those contractors, the Trump Organization. So are you surprised? Now you go, this is what happens when you have people doing shoddy work, when the people who are building this stuff aren't living in that stuff. And it's all I've been saying for years. The guy who puts the roof on my kid's school, I want them to have a kid sitting in the seat next to my kid, so that roof isn't going to come tumbling down because they cut as many corners as possible, which is why I'm a supporter of prevailing wage and Buy American provisions. Just makes sense to me. Let's quick go to the phones. Got Alice on one. How are we doing, Alice?
We're doing good. Wanted to say that I gather that some of the infrastructure money is going to be repairing some of the bridges in Pittsburgh.
That's the hope.
From what I'm hearing on the local news.
Yep. Well, we've got 46,000 structurally deficient bridges in this country. There's bound to be one in your backyard.
Oh, absolutely. They replaced the two main ones that we have to travel on. They've been replaced within the past 5 years, so that's a good thing. But, yeah, I was hearing that, and there was something that was said about someone that I know that lives in Pittsburgh was saying that they're starting to do a lot of hiring. So apparently the money's starting to come out.
Oh, no, it is. Look, I can't get an electrician to do any electrical work as we're moving to a new studio space because all the electricians are working on, you know, all of these different projects. In fact, they've got electricians coming from other areas to work in this area, according to the local union leader. There's nobody. There's literally nobody. And we're gonna have this crunch as the investment comes flowing out and people are doing these jobs. I don't know that we have enough yet. I know my trades friends say they're going to meet the demand because that's their attitude, the can-do spirit. But I got to wonder, because there's a lot to be done.
Well, there is. And one thing about it, it's trickling down, unlike the trickle-down voodoo economics. Have a good evening, Rick.
You too. Thanks. No, she hits an interesting point. The trickle-down effect, this is the kind of, when people think of trickle-down, this is what they think of. You pay a worker a decent wage to build something in your community, and they live in that community. That money reverberates through the economy, and it does. It goes from their pocket to the local diner, to the local movie theater, to the local grocery store. It stays local, and they buy stuff. And if you have that local supply chain, it continues to grow and reverberate and continues to move around and well, create an economy like my grandparents' generation built. This is why I'm so thrilled with Joe Biden. Look, has he done everything I wanted him to do? No. Are there things he's really screwed up? Yeah, the railroad thing I think was a major screw up. But this is enormous. And this is why the moneyed interests are putting so much time and energy into attacking him, which is why the divisive stuff over balloons, because they got nothing else. When you start talking to working people about what he's actually doing, And when these jobs start really start ramping up and these projects start going and you start seeing those damn orange cones everywhere. No, Joe Biden did that. And then you could be angry for traffic. And I think Joe would take that because it means we're rebuilding stuff. And then when you get on the internet and you can actually make your angry tweets faster because, well, they invested in broadband. Think about Joe. Joe did that. Not very hard to think about. And, you know, the jobs that are going to come out of it, maybe the good quality infrastructure that's going to come out of it that's not going to go collapsing. Huh. Interesting. So for me, there's a lot to be excited about in this moment. And I know all we got to hear about is how the outrage machine is talking about inflation and talking about balloons and you know, what other nonsense they come up with. But the reality is, the hope is working people are waking up. And the hope is that we start going, we're going to reclaim our communities. We're going to reclaim our manufacturing prowess. We're going to reclaim the middle class. And we're going to get it. We're going to get it back from the wealthy who have taken it from.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.